This is the dawning of the age of Aquarius. Oh, no, no, wrong song. This is the intro of the Lifetime Athlete podcast. PK, good morning.
Hey, buddy. Didn't know you were going there. It's almost as catchy as that. When's that? Is that 60s or 70s?
You know, I think that was 60s. That was the fifth dimension. And the reason I brought it up was there's a story involved, and it happened the other day. So before I even tell the story, I should first say, hey, thank you so much for tuning in. This is host John Zombro and co-host PK. We're here with the Lifetime Athlete Podcast, episode number 188. And we're here, I think we're all here, because we have a bias in that the life best lived, health, longevity, fitness, performance, happiness, involves athleticism. And so we're here to try to blend that in. And that's what we discuss on this podcast. So in speaking of discussions, I was hanging out post-workout with a few peeps from the training tribe, and the topic of foot function and orthotics and shoe wear came up. And I was asked what my opinions were or how they've evolved. So I'm a person who has had quite a bit of training in foot function and gait mechanics and shoe design and orthotics manufacture and prescription, all those things. And I've really changed quite a bit in how I view much of those applications. And so my response was, you know, essentially I've become a barefoot hippie.
Have you?
Yeah, and if you look at the dawning of the age of Aquarius, that was really a song which epitomized the barefoot hippie.
Got it. Wow, that is a deep cut, and that is a lovely transition there. I got it. Okay, so we'll break that down for me just a little bit. So are you saying now you're advocating for more of a minimalist, you know, if you are wearing a shoe? Or why did you get to that sort of barefoot hippie in terms of like footwear mentality?
Yeah. And I would preface this by saying everything has to be taken in context.
Course,
so there's always a place for everything. And that's what I was sharing with these folks was, well, as I look at both literature, you know, research in these areas, and also my experiences, my observations, it appears that the more we can safely and effectively and gradually strengthen and optimize the foot's function, it seems to travel up the chain and enhance both performance and injury prevention, believe it or not. And yet, having said that, you know, even though I'm an advocate for it, I think there's still a place for, so let's say, an orthotic in the case of an individual who really just has a lot of issues, injuries, deformities that probably can't be fully strengthened out of. So they're going to need some assistance, or someone who's in an acute injury, we can use those things to offload and allow for healing. But I view them usually as temporary at best. And I'm certainly an advocate for encouraging folks to do some actual barefoot exercise and then have most of their footwear be as minimal as their body and their conditions or terrain allows for.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I was just thinking about how just in my little home gym, I've been sort of switching it up quite a bit, even when I'm just lifting, from going barefoot to wearing shoes and wearing different types of shoes, you know, wearing some Nike Frees. And I guess I do have some training shoes that are a little bit with certainly a bigger heel and more padding. It's an exercise like the lunge varies dramatically based on the footwear that you have, from no shoes to those sort of more padded shoes. That's interesting. And I guess I just sort of accidentally been switching it up and getting some different things out of it.
Yeah. And sometimes it just depends on, well, what are we trying to accomplish? If we're trying to accomplish, let's say, strengthening of the foot and kind of linking the body's movements most effectively, well, maybe going barefoot is an ideal way to train. However, if you're saying, oh, I'm trying to get range of motion or depth in my squat or lunge, that heel elevation helps a little bit for that. So again, there's always a way where we try to stay clear from using always and never, but most of the time I would say, yeah, you know, in fact, that thing had occurred three times recently. Now that you've got me thinking, got a text from actually an old friend asked me if I was still in the business of, you know, of manufacturing orthotics. And, I said, no, I'm a barefoot hippie. And then, someone else had emailed me. Basically, the email came in as an order for a number of things, and I had to get back and say, hey, love you, man, but no to everything.
Well, that's certainly your evolution as a professional, in addition to your mentality in regard to the footwear.
Yeah, and that's maybe the bigger thing here is I think it's totally fine, and I don't have a problem saying that, you know, some of the things that I thought or was taught were wrong, or I've changed my mind, and I do that. I think where the problem lies in a lot of this, you know, health and fitness science is people, their bias so strongly that they can't say that. Yeah. And they stick with convention as dogma that, you know, eventually doesn't work. And so, you know, we've got to steer clear of that if it's at all possible to do.
Oh, yeah. I find that to be maybe one of the most frustrating personality or mindsets or I guess philosophies to run into, where it's like, you know, someone planted a flag with this particular idea or methodology and they're just, you know, like immovable, but also irrational, especially when new information comes out. It's like, John, how long have you been in the PT game for? What, like 30, 35 years, 40 years now?
In human performance for all of that and more, PT, well over three decades.
So it would be insane of us to say things wouldn't change in 3 decades, right? Like if we just said, all right, John, let's check back in 30 years from right now, this podcast, you know, episode 700 and however many, 1,188. If we were to say, has anything changed? I don't think I didn't expect anything to change. That'd be ridiculous. So especially in, you know, regard to the human body when so much science is involved. So I just think it's natural that things are going to change and that, you know, it's healthy to say I've learned something new and involved what I know. It just means that you're continuing to grow.
And I guess in getting into today's topic of the podcast, what you just said is, I'm going to share some things that I've learned, and I'm hoping that anyone who's listening learns a few things too. And we want to be coachable athletes, and you know, we want to be capable of learning. And so here's my lead. And I love doing this podcast, and I really also love chopping up topics with you, PK, but I must say that what we've been doing lately in the pod has been especially enjoyable. So we've essentially been hosting a Training the Beasts series, which is based on my book, Animal Fit. And in episode 186, we looked at the characteristics and the training methodologies of the force dominant athlete. In number 187, last week, we focused on the elastic athlete, those gifted with speed and agility. And now today, we're going to give our attention to, here's our title, Training the Endurance-Based Athlete. And so this is not necessarily a primer on how to train for endurance sports, although we'll touch on that towards the end. It's primarily this show today will provide an explanation of how to optimize physical preparation for athletes that have high natural levels of endurance and a predisposition to certain types of exercise and training.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is the third in a sort of companion piece for all the major base athletes in Animal Fit. And I like how you said that. It's not how to train for endurance, but if you do fall into this endurance athlete, you know, what are the main considerations? So let's start by saying what is the makeup of an endurance athlete all about, John?
Yeah, and it's an easily pictured list. Mm-hmm. First of all, we have relatively thin, light bones. Mm-hmm. That would make sense just from a movement economy standpoint. We have relatively, again, compared to these other beasts, stiff joints or very stable joints, shall we say, that don't require a lot of muscular energy for their stability.
Yes, yes. And, you know, again, I'll just kind of say this once. If you think you might fit into this or you're trying to learn more about the endurance athlete, the book Animal Fit goes into much greater detail and explanation of all of these different pieces. for the purpose of the podcast today, we're going to be hitting the high points. But if you're thinking, wow, I want to learn more about that, the book really goes into it in greater detail. But we're just going to touch on the high points here.
Yes, the lifetimeathlete.com/animal fit. Okay.
Okay, so we've got thin leg bones, relatively stiff joints that require energy for stability. Let's take a brief, just by comparison, the other athletes actually have, just talk to me about why these joints are different just at a super high level.
Yeah, okay, so we talked about the Bears, the force dominant athletes. They usually have somewhat mobile joints. That allows them to apply their power through a greater range of motion. We looked at the elastic athlete, which is somewhat medium, moderate, average, or typical with joint mobility. And that gives them that kind of versatility or movement variability, which we see in elastic athletes. And now with these endurance-oriented creatures where it's all about energy conservation, a stable joint, AKA stiff, is basically one which doesn't leak energy or require muscular force to make it stable.
That's absolutely perfect. Yes. And so stiff, stable in terms of the joints, again, we're not talking about the holistic creature being stiff in this case.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. And then, you know, right, we always do the same things when we're looking at analyzing body types. So we look at bones, we look at joints, we also look at muscles. And most of your endurance athletes are going to have a predominance, in other words, better than 50%, oftentimes, you know, over 90% of slow twitch or type one muscle fibers.
Absolutely. Making sense. Yeah. Picture of this athlete's lining up in my mind.
Yep. And now we look at some of their, these characteristics or traits. Well, they're very rhythm dependent. And so an endurance athlete will generally refine movement through repetition.
Yeah, and that really, I like, I haven't thought about it like that, but rhythm dependent, like that, you know, we think about pace. Pace is a term that we would use for, you know, think about running or cycling, but rhythm actually paints a little bit more of a poetic picture, but it seems to make more sense when we think about the underlying characteristics of this athlete to me.
Yeah, and oftentimes that physical presentation goes along with some behavioral characteristics where many of these endurance or fatigue resistant athletes are often quite meticulous and they pay more attention to precision that and that precise repetition or rhythm than just absolute power production.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then when you come into the physics world, so these are the people who do their best to kind of maintain energy in the system more than generate it like a force-driven athlete or transfer it like an elastic beast.
Absolutely. Yes. And again, I'm thinking about the high-level marathoners, you know, or watching some of these. We're getting into the Olympics, like pre-Olympics track and field season, that energy maintainers, that's a great way of describing. Well, I think I've got a picture, obviously we've talked about it, but if you're listening, you've got a picture of who this endurance athlete is. John, let's shift gears and go into strengths and weaknesses of these types of athletes.
You bet. So right away with that list of traits, which we just described, you're going to recognize that this is an extremely economical, or in other words, miles per gallon, fuel efficiency is high in the endurance athlete. And so they're fatigue resistant. They're just designed to not necessarily produce high force, but to just be able to be really good at producing submax force over and over for extended duration.
Totally makes sense.
And because of that, they're much more tolerant of duration or length of a workout and usually volume in a program overall than Bears, which we talked about them being somewhat moderate in terms of the total volume of training, which is optimal for them. Then the Panthers, again, that's your elastic athlete, really requires a low volume in most cases for training. But this Coyote, which is the endurance gifted beast, does quite well with relatively high volume as long as the intensity is kept appropriate.
Interesting. Okay. And then talk to me about what happens when they get into this longer endurance type activity.
Yeah, again, you'll see that combination of the physical traits and some of the psychology of the beast, because they often have a zen-like ability to concentrate on a task. and just focus and keep repeating and doing. And that's as long as it's not overly complex or distraction filled, which tends to work better for the other athletes like the Bears and Panthers. You don't see as many Coyotes thriving in a distraction filled environment.
Right. John, this is interesting. Excuse me. You meet some of these endurance athletes. Do you think that it's because I like that that Zen-like ability to concentrate? It's because they're inclined to do it because it feels good, because they know maybe even at a cellular level, the performance is high. I mean, I used to think about that as discipline or as, like focus. But it seems more now that my understanding of what makes up an endurance athlete has evolved, it seems more natural than it does to me as a Wolverine. It doesn't feel natural, that repeatable sort of endurance activity. So I always look at it as very impressive. I'm wondering if they're just really leaning in and they're just like getting in the zone and it feels good because it's what they're made to do.
Yeah, I like to call that nature plus nurture. Mm. So obviously some of these individuals will have that nature or genetic traits or gifts to naturally get into that. But once they start doing those kinds of activities, it reinforces those abilities. So that's the nurture part where, you know, training or lifestyle even further shapes, enhances, or refines the genetic programming.
Got it. I like it. What else are we thinking about? Strengths, weaknesses.
Well, what you'll usually see, especially in a group workout or team practice, is a relatively high intra-workout recovery ability in the endurance gifted athletes. So rapid repeatability. They don't need too many rest breaks. They're the first ones kind of back up and ready to go. And they can just, you know, pile on the reps more so than the other beasts.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think that totally makes sense.
Yeah. Now, these people are not exceedingly strong, fast, or agile in relative terms. I mean, obviously, they have some of those capacities because they're humans. Sure. But the kryptonite for the endurance athlete is to combine the demand of high force output, like, you know, speed or resistance, with skill. And when you do that, their skill set isn't best formulated to adapt or perform in those types of demands. And so that's where we'll see the Bear or the Panther have the upper hand. So, I don't want to say it's a glaring weakness, but if you ever take a person who's kind of really endurance oriented and you put them in like a court sport, or you have them just hike off trail with a heavy pack, they fall apart.
Mm. And again, we're just calling them like we see them. We're not mm-hmm. saying there's any sort of moral judgment on the weakness, but that is just a physical truth that you described there.
Yeah, and last but not least, so these folks don't generate like bears or transfer like panthers energy as much. They prefer to get some energy into their system, whether it's they generate some of it or they sure. borrow it from the environment, but they bend it and steer it and hang on to it, minimizing leakage, maybe call it ride the wave. They need and use momentum more so than the other types of athletes. And when they're let's say going to do a jump test, which we do in Animal Fit, they use lope and launch.
Indeed, they do. Well, let's talk about this. Who are they? Like actual athletes? Let's talk about the beasts themselves and the hybrids. In Animal Fit, in the context of Animal Fit, the book, the methodology, who are these endurance athletes?
Okay, so the quintessential endurance athlete, the economical mover, is the coyote. Mm-hmm. And some of the best examples we have currently who've been talked about on this show include Eliud Kipchoge of Kenya, a world record holder in the marathon. Shalane Flanagan of the United States, also a top distance runner up to the marathon, until very recently. If you want to think in broader terms, even than athletics, Steven Tyler,
yeah, if you want to think in terms of pop culture, absolutely.
Yeah. And one of the reasons why, and we could even say, like, when you look at bike racing, you know, any of the mountain climbing specialists, so the people mm-hmm. that shine on the climbs, you know, they're these light, you know, economical folks. Well, these are all essentially the ancient messengers and possibly in reality, the only humans who were really built to go the distance it's a natural fit for these creatures.
Yeah, definitely. We've mentioned it before. I mean, this is the person, you got a group of 10 people and you got to say, hey, someone's got to let that next village over know that there's a forest fire. Who's going? You're picking the coyote.
Exactly. And that's how we always build teams. You know, you always pick the player for the position, and that's what equals winning. And so, you know, we're all in this together, you know, the human beasts in the animal fit kingdom. So next up, when you say, okay, now we always talk about these hybridized body types, because in humans we have a genetic melting pot, and we have the wolf. And so the wolf is the stamina endowed being, and it's kind of like you sprinkle a little bit of panther into that coyote. And so in history, some of the great examples would be Roger Bannister. So he was the first person to break the 4-minute mile, and most of your middle distance runners, so maybe the runners who compete at 800 to 3K, you know, in running, midfielders in soccer, some of your point guards, not all of them, time trial cyclists. These are very stamina gifted beasts, and that panther influence to the base of coyote yields a somewhat agile mover, but with really good aerobic power, not too much raw speed or strength, but definitely more than what you'll see in the base coyote.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up midfielders. I think that you can you actually can see that wolf pretty prevalent in the soccer player, especially when they're, you know, fighting for a tackle. It's where not only do you need to be able to run for 90 plus minutes, but you need to have that sort of that strength and that base when you're sort of challenging for the ball. And so that's interesting. I'm glad that you put that on the list, because it helps really put that picture in my mind. What about the other hybrid that we have from the coyote?
Yes, and that's our raccoon. And so the raccoon is really the blend of power and mobility with that base of fatigue resistance. And so in sports, we've got some great examples. We've got Gabby Reese, you know, a hitter in volleyball. We've got, I hope I don't pronounce this name incorrectly, Kyle Yuan, who is a Rio Olympic champion diver from China. Ooh. Some of our high jumpers and even some of our gymnasts. And what happens when we look at how we create a raccoon in animal fit is we have that coyote base, but we add some bear properties. So that creature will maintain most of that joint stability, but they gain a bit more muscular power in their presentation. So they have this, particularly you see it, this ability to do repeat jumping. It's quite common across all those athletes.
Interesting, because I wouldn't have thought Gabby Reese, first of all, she's tall, mm-hmm. slender for sure, but I wouldn't have said that she had any bear in her. If we just take her as an N of one, what do you think we can see in her athletic performance that would be indicative of being this mix of, you know, base of the coyote, adding in some bear?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'd say, you know, we go through those things. Well, let's look at bone structure. Let's look at joint mobility, muscles. And so we can go back to that. And height doesn't really factor in. So that's I think that always throws a curveball in animal fit, because the person says, well, you know, tall versus short. Well, you can be a tall or short version of any of these animals. So, you know, and I like volleyball as an example, because the metric or the key performance indicator is RGA, and that's repeat jump ability.
Yeah.
And so in order to have repeat jump ability, you have to have three things. You have to have some amount of power to get the jump off. You have to have some amount of stiffness, both for the jump and also to be able to do it repeatedly, and also a little bit of endurance in your presentation, again, so that you don't fatigue out. So if you said if it's just a one-time jump, you know, some of the other athletes could probably either A, you know, jump higher or, you know, be more explosive, but to do it over and over in an athletic context really requires these raccoon type traits, because the percent drop off in the repeat jumps of elite volleyball players is quite minimal.
Interesting. And if you think about that jump test, you do need to have, you don't even get a step you're just like going down and exploding up, as opposed to, you know, like the panther who would take one or two steps, and then the coyote who would do the run up, right? Like, what did you just call that? The lope and launch. In volleyball, you don't have that option. You're just standing right there, and you have to explode up not only once, but several times in a row sometimes.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Sometimes they do get the chance to do a short approach, you know,
that's true,
a step here, step there. But a lot of it is, like you indicated, just a counter movement jump. But it's a counter movement jump done multiple times, which that's a whole different ball game than a one-timer.
Very cool. I like that. So before we move on, Jay-Z, we have your unique mindset because you are a wolf. You're a hybrid. So talk to us about your experience being a coyote base, but having a little bit of panther in you.
Yeah, and I guess I could go in different directions, but
sure.
It turns out that, like in sports, what happened for me in this case was, I would notice that I was generally somewhat quick, but not truly the fastest person in different sports. And then on the other end, I had decent endurance, but not quite as much as some of these more coyote-like folks. And so where I started to find myself developing a style of play, for example, in basketball or tennis, was using kind of a stamina-driven model, because that allowed me to be, you know, more competitive than if I tried to be like an athlete that I wasn't. And then particularly getting into running, I started out my running career as a sprinter, wanting to be a sprinter, but, you know, having to move up in distance because I just wasn't quite endowed or gifted with enough speed. And then I also tried some of the longer distance stuff, and I found, just don't do that well there. I'm kind of in the middle. And so, you know, you can say, well, if someone is reasonably quick and has decent endurance, they're probably going to make a good, you know, half miler or miler, you know, a runner who runs the 800 meters or 1500 meters. Well, and that was my case. So while most of my times existed on the high side of mediocre anyway, my best performances though were in that kind of 800 to 1500 realm, where on a percentage basis, I could do better than I could at the 400 or at, you know, going up in Ks or miles. And so that, you know, that was interesting over time to see those things come out. And then in more recent years, understanding better these biomechanics and physiologic properties, like, oh, okay, well, this is how you train said wolf. And, you know, I've had some enjoyment and some success in using that method with myself and also with quite a few of the folks that I've worked with.
I love it. Well, that's a nice segue into designing programs for these endurance oriented beasts. What have you learned? How do we apply these tricks to these athletes?
Yeah, so we go back into those basic elements of workout program design. So we're talking about things like frequency, intensity, duration, volume, density, etc. Mm-hmm. And first of all, any of the beasts mentioned, this is going to be most prominent for the coyote and slightly less for wolves and raccoons, but longer duration sessions. I mean, these are the athletes that actually can and should occasionally do long workouts, which tend to toast, certainly most panthers and many bears.
Right. Makes sense.
Yep. And then we go into looking at a workout, a training session, a practice should have an opportunity for repetitive practice of a motor skill or a movement pattern, because these creatures need that repetition to refine their motor output, develop their rhythm in the task.
I like that. And yes. Okay. And that's not only tapping into their that's tapping into both their mind, fulfilling their mind and their and their body for that training.
Yeah, and I can probably give an example. Like you take a panther, a pure panther, kind of an explosive, elastic athlete. They also typically learn motor skills pretty rapidly. So in a workout, you can give them a very high demand thing, sometimes just a verbal cue, and they can execute it really well a couple of times. Okay, that's done. Whereas you wouldn't want to do that with one of these endurance athletes. What you want to do with them is bring down the intensity or the demand and then give them multiple times to practice and work on it to get better and also to get the conditioning that fits their body type. And so, you know, if you wanted to be really specific and it was a box jump, which is a fun right. thing to do, you know, you could, you know, quickly get a panther, do a couple of big box jumps and they're done. Whereas, with the coyote, we might actually do more at a lower height and we might manipulate the recovery or rest intervals as well.
Right. Right. I like that. Well, talk to me out in terms of volume.
Okay. So volume is the total amount of training over a given time period. And we typically use weeks as a microcycle, but you can use anything that you want. High volume in most cases is going to be either best tolerated or most productive for the endurance creature. They can take a lot of training, again, as long as you know, our intensity is dialed into what's appropriate.
Got it. Okay. Makes sense.
Now here's a cool one. Relatively low frequency. And if we think about it for a minute, it will make sense. If you're doing these long duration workouts, you don't need to do them twice a day in most cases to, you know, get these benefits. So we might have several long days in a week and several short days. I'm talking about duration. It could be distance if that's what the athlete's sure. doing, but it doesn't matter. So we want to keep the frequency a little bit lower. Whereas with, you know, with bears and panthers, we talked about, okay, high intensity, but you know, low duration, low volume, and then often, and that stimulates the kind of like the neural adaptations that those beasts require. Well, these coyotes are very much more circulation dominant. You know, they're very rhythm based. They don't need or even like a lot of electric sparking in their business. And so they just do better with using this model applied to any sport. And that's where the intensity comes in. And so this group, because they don't generate force or transfer it elastically like the other athletes, they need and thrive on low to moderate intensity for the most part, with just small sprinklings of high intensity to bring out some properties in their bodies when you know, when we plan that accordingly.
Absolutely. What about in terms of density? Because that's been an interesting difference in the athletes so far.
Yeah. So density is simply it's basically the compression of rest breaks within a workout. And so, you know, we talked about the panther last week, where they need low density workouts for the most part because they produce really high outputs. Then they need some rest time to, you know, replenish their creatine phosphate stores and clear some hydrogen ions and lactate. Yes, yes, yes. Well, with our coyotes, our endurance athletes, they can get away with more density, especially in the big major workouts, which we sometimes call fitness maker sessions. Mm-hmm. And that's because they recover quickly and we're generally training them at slightly lower intensities.
I like it. Let's talk about lifespan. Let's talk about being an endurance athlete for the long haul. What are some of the things that you think about or you talk to your clients about?
Yeah, so lifespan considerations. I love thinking about this because as a lifetime athlete, we all need to, you know, kind of have a vision or a perspective on where we're going and what we're doing and how it's all working. And so first of all, I would say when you look at primary and secondary attributes, or we call them strengths and weaknesses, sure. We want to use these words maximize and minimize for the most part. And so when you have a younger athlete, or you're an athlete at any age who's in a focused period, you want to use what I call max min. And so that's a maximum effort on your strength and a minimum focus on your weakness. And so for these athletes, we're going to work endurance and we're going to keep all that supplemental support training, minimal, just enough to not develop efficiencies like a loss of mobility or excessive weakness. And so we're just going to really pile on the endurance and bring out that characteristic to the max that we can.
Got it. That makes total sense.
And then moving along, whether you're at a point which you want to call middle age, or you're just saying, right now, I want a balanced approach in my training, well, we use mod-mod, and that's moderate-moderate. So you basically do a roughly even distribution of both endurance and GPP, or general physical preparation methodologies, which emphasize strength, speed, power, and agility in addition to endurance. And so that's a nice way to train, you know, just to be all around. And it works pretty well for most people, especially when they're not, let's say, super serious or focused on, an endurance driven objective.
Right. And then we flip that. I'm sure there's something in opposition to the first version.
Yeah, exactly. You're reading my mind, of course, although you're a reader and editor of Animal Fit, so you already know flippity floppity means min-max or minimize maximize. So now we're going to minimize strengths or endurance in this case and maximize all those other capacities. And this is something that I'm doing personally. I mean, these days I'm touching on some mortality and, almost 60. Sure. And so I'm considering myself an older athlete. And although still somewhat youthful, but it's become very important for me to shore up deficiencies. And especially when you want to train for sports and life activities other than the long distance stuff. And so here's how all that works. You have to give the body a little bit more of what it needs and what it doesn't have, especially as it gets older, it starts to demand that. And then also, I have to encourage some of my clients this, hey, remember that a strength is always a strength. It's in there. And if you've been working on it for 40, 50 years, it's not going away. And so in this case, that's endurance. And it takes very little work, effort, training to tune up or maintain it in these, coyote-derived beasts, especially if they have a high training age.
Right. And that absolutely makes sense. And I think that that's a... What's cool about that is that not only is that a lifespan consideration, that's also a goal-specific consideration that when you're working with people, or the awareness of knowing that you are endurance-based based on the Animal Fit book, you can really tailor to wherever you're at, Talk to me about training strength and elastic athletes for endurance sports. As we close this up, let's really think about that consideration.
Yeah, and this is the tweakology, obviously, that's in Animal Fit, but I use it in a lot of my coaching, whether it's individuals or groups. And it's that you can train any human, any athlete, any beast for any sport that they want to do. But if you know about these traits that each of them have, then you're armed with this kind of powerful knowledge that you can leverage to then, get more results, more fun, less drudgery or injury. And so that's really where all this comes from. And I try to go back and say, look, if you're just picking the sport where you're probably going to be the best at, well, then use all these things to define who you are. But if you say, nah, I want to do such and such, we simply use, who you are as a beast to get you what you want out of your goal. And so you wouldn't train a bear or a panther the same way you train a coyote. I think we've established that. But now if you said, as you did, okay, well, I've got, these bear base plus hybrids and panther plus hybrids. How do you get them to be good at endurance sports, relatively speaking? Okay, I must answer. Well, if we take bears, badgers, and wolverines, that was the first group that we did in episode 166. They need more of their training to be intervalized. And so this is a really cool thing. Instead of doing a lot of steady state training, like if it is running, for example, you send these coyotes out on a long run, they're going to eat it up. You send a bear out, they're going to break them down. And so we want to intervalize or do low intensity intervals. And so that's really a cool way of thinking, because most people will say, I only thought you did high intensity interval training. And yes, that's absolutely a great application for the use of intervals. But in the case of these high body mass and higher joint mobility beasts in most cases, by giving those little breaks, we really don't sacrifice any of the conditioning benefits, but we allow for some freshness in terms of their movement patterns so we don't wear out the joints.
Interesting. Okay. And that absolutely makes sense. Okay. Well, shift gears. Talk to me about panthers, bobcats, and otters. How do we train them for endurance sports?
Oh, yeah. And there was one thing I should have added well. In doing that, if we're trying to get endurance properties in bears, badgers, and wolverines, we also would mix in more lower impact work. So some of that training, cycling in the pool, so forth and so on, that's really of great benefit, the low impact cross training for the bear group. Now, with the panthers, as you suggested, those are our elastic, speed and agility endowed creatures, and also includes bobcats and otters. Well, what they require, and I can explain this from a physiological perspective, a very slow volume progression. So again, that total workload that's done, you know, over these time periods, even as well as intra-workout duration, if it's in steady state, we can get away with more steady state with panthers than we can with bears, but we have to keep it at a very low intensity. And the reason is this: we want to encourage fiber type conversion. So those fast twitch or type 2 fibers, which are highly prevalent in the panthers and cousins, we want to create every opportunity we can for some of those fibers to convert to type 1s or more oxidative fibers that can use more fat for energy as opposed to being dependent only upon glycolysis. And so that's really one of the secrets. If you want to develop endurance in a very panther-esque beast, have them do a lot of very easy, low, slow cardio mojo, and you're going to get a better return than if you do a bunch of interval training with them. You'll just basically default back to training their speed characteristics and not develop their endurance.
Right. And so some of that is the idea that low, slow cardio mojo is quote unquote training. It may not, especially for a dynamic athlete that falls into the sort of the elastic side of things, they might say, oh, this is nothing. We'll do more of that because you're building up that sort of that base on that cellular level or whatever, on that very sort of micro below the surface. It's not going to feel like much, but it's going to have big benefits.
Yeah. In fact, you know, we're talking about like giving athletes what they need or want and don't have. Well, ironically, even though if you said to the panther, hey, just go super easy, the panther's going to start out and say, yeah, this really does seem super easy. But then fairly rapidly, they're going to be like, man, this is getting exponentially hard because they don't have the metabolic properties to oxidize fat. And you know, they don't have as many capillaries. They don't have as much of these type 1 fibers. But so if we keep them in that zone, which biases the change, that's where it works. Whereas, you know, you take the coyote and they can do that for forever, and it feels just as easy to them almost as it does at the beginning, where you know, you wouldn't see that in the panther. I got just one or two more points to make, and it's another story, you know. So I had kind of gotten into running competitively, you know, last couple of years in high school and then into college. And the wolf thing I wasn't thinking of it in wolf terms back then, but I would always look forward to the interval training days and when we were going to we're going to run hard and, you know, we're doing, you know, blank by 400 on the track. And, you know, I would look forward to that and eat it up. And I would dread the long runs. I would have nightmares about them and I hated them. And there were teammates that I had who were more coyotes who were the opposite. You know, they would be like, oh man, I just love the long run, but I loathe the interval workouts. And I was the opposite. And that was, you know, one of the first indicators of this hybridized or mixed physiology issue. And I grew to see that in others and use it as well, but it's very interesting. So if you're a listener and you've kind of noticed like, oh, okay, I really got to force myself to do one kind of workout, but I just freaking love doing another. It's probably right. Because your body is telling you it's made for one and loves it more than the other. And it's fine if you want to do something different, but those messages are sometimes very strong within the beast.
Yeah, absolutely. But I would imagine, John, that if you go back to that moment, you didn't think about it like, oh, this is because I'm not genetically predisposed to excel or struggle with this workout. You mostly was just like, I just don't like this, that dread, the nightmares, right? Or do you think that having Animal Fit, let's say we get a time machine, go back in time, handy Animal Fit, we have a conversation. Do you think it would have taken away the emotional or reduced the emotional impact of that? So it could have just been a physical stimulus as opposed to this sort of existential crisis.
Oh yeah, totally. And hopefully, like any time a person gets this information, you know, sure. Coach has the information too. So you can work together to, you know, to pull this out. That's not always true or possible in some circumstances, but the feeling bad about oneself, you know, I had some of that. I was like, oh man, I just stink at doing these, right. these long runs, and I'm just weak of character, and I was right. probably, you know, what it wasn't so much that as much as the human body, the inner beast is brilliant, and it was saying, dude, you are trying to force me to be something I'm not, and I'm going to let you know every time you do it.
Yeah, and I think that is, again, the it answers the question why. You know, mm-hmm. you thought, I just don't have the strength of character. If you could have just said, all right, I'm going to go neutral. Again, this requires a time machine, but go neutral and then just answer the question why. Why do I experience this physically from this particular set of training and said, oh, you know, this is actually a challenge for you for these reasons, and you dig into the why. Then you can shed that sort of that intellectual, emotional baggage and just focus on the training. You know, those long runs, you just be like, hey, I'm grinding this out. I'm working on something else. It's not, I'm basically, the whole goal of the session, that's exactly the same training exercise, could change based on what the knowledge that you have going in being different.
Oh yeah. And just swinging it back around, you know, talking about how we're going to take these strength and elastic athletes and help them to train to increase their endurance or participate in endurance sports. Well, we're going to use that min-max model. So we're going to minimize focusing on their unique gifts and maximize the endurance component of their workload. But we need to do this. We need to mix in enough of their respective strengths to keep it fun right. and successful and make it not a grind. So always, you know, with a bear, I'm going to put some heavy, relatively speaking, lifts in there because that's going to help them. So there's going to be some jumps and sprints in the Panther and Cousins programs, even though they're doing a live endurance stuff, because that helps them stay centered on, hey, yeah, this is my inner athlete. I'm not just doing something that I sort of struggle and suffer with. And that, I think that's a key, you know, because like I always say silly things when we're working out. I say, okay, everybody has fun. Nobody gets hurt. You know, let's get some results. Let's not get injured. And that, those things are important. But in the end, I think we're really saying, well, hey, let's have fun. And let this thing that we call lifetime athleticism be additive. In fact, you know, I'm super coffeeed up, you know, kind of rambling a little bit, but when I look at exercise, it's like, yeah, okay, you know, exercise, we're pretty sure it has some benefits when you look at the statistics. And then we say training. Well, now you're training, you're taking your exercise and you're giving it a specific purpose because you have a goal or objective. Then we say, well, play. I mean, let's turn most of it into play and have it be fun and a celebration of the joy of movement. And then maybe the last thing is compete, you know, and we don't want to lose that to test and challenge the self and also to, you know, to fight a bit with others and do it amicably. That is really the ultimate experience through which all this athleticism can then give us you know, not just athletic neurons and killer T cells and blood vessels. And yeah, that, all that's great, but a perspective and a vibrancy that, that we can live with and also share and hopefully inspire others.
Well said, my friend. Well said.
Thank you so much. Hey, listeners, thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate you. And, you know, we're wrapping up really what was a three-part discussion, episodes 1, 66, 7, and 8, on training the beasts. And I've got tons more guests and topics to come, as well as some more animal fit nuggets. PK loves the nuggets, such as impacts of neurotransmitters and personality on training and performance. So we're going to be doing a mailbag on animal fit and animal fit related questions. If you've been listening to the show or picking up other things or a reader of the book, please send us your questions. You can find us at thelifetimeathlete.com. And any questions you have, we are going to do our best to answer them. And thanks again.
Adios, everyone.